You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Jay Horowitz with a special edition of Amazing Mental on my podcast. My special guest is my old friend, Roger McDowell. Roger, let me ask you a question. Are you still getting residuals from your appearance on a Jerry Seinfeld show 30 years ago?
Yes, I am. And it's not as frequent as it used to be, but it's probably, I'd say about once a month that I get them, and it's somewhere, you know, $13, $14.
You go to Wendy's or something, McDonald's, right? Get a little burger for yourself?
Oh, yeah, I get a Happy Meal.
Let me ask this. The premise of the show, as I remember, you came to the defense of Keith, who saved you a lot of runs at first base, right?
I mean, sure.
The George and Newman spit on him. I just forget the details. Refresh my memory what the details were.
Well, it was a spoof off the JFK second shooter.
Right.
And so the way the show goes, apparently Newman and Kramer were jawing with Keith, called him pretty boy when he came out of the clubhouse. And I just happened to be up on the gravelly road behind the bushes. And I remember the old Laugh-In, you know?
Yes,
the old
yes.
Laugh-In show where Artie Johnson, you know, parched the bushes. And they kind of said, you know, okay, do something like that. So that was kind of my acting bit. Obviously, I didn't have a speaking part, but I did have a so-called spitting part. But I will tell you this. After about 20 takes, I said, guys, I got no more saliva left. I got nothing for you. I said, can I get a drink of water or something? And at that point, I remember them saying, well, just act like you're spitting. So, you know, there was some acting involved. And so, like you said, 30 years later, I'm still getting residuals. And
did Keith ever say thank you for coming to his defense, Roger?
He always said thank you by his actions on the field. You know, he always picked me up, and when I needed a kick in the butt or a play to be made or something, he was always there. So, and you know, it doesn't have to be always words that tell you that they appreciate it, and a lot of times it's actions.
Roger, I'm thrilled you're one of the 65 people coming back from our all-timers day game August 27th. Have you ever been to an all-timers day game before?
Well, no, I've never. I mean, I'm just now an old-timer, I guess. I mean, I turned 61 last December, and so I haven't been to an old-timers game. I've seen plenty of them and been at the ballpark, both as a player and as a coach. We'd go to various ballparks and they'd have the old-timers games, and how neat it was to see the history of the, you know, the organization and to see the guys come back and the camaraderie. And it is, it's a big fraternity, and it doesn't matter what era or what year you played, you're a part of an organization, and once you're part of, you always will be.
13 guys from the 86 team are going to be back, which should be nice. Let me ask you about two guys who, in my mind, get overlooked a little bit. Kevin Mitchell that year was a rookie. He played shortstop, played the outfield. You know, I think Gary named him World because he switched around so many positions. What do you remember about Kevin's contributions to the 86 team that year?
Well, see, Kevin and I came up through the minor leagues with the Mets together. So we'd already formed a relationship and a friendship. The part that I remember and really looking back is, and you remember so well, Jay, is that Kevin was basically our fourth outfielder, and he was our fifth infielder. And Davey would plug him in because offensively he was a force. And so Davey would plug him in. You know, he'd give him starts here and there, but mostly it was off the bench as a pinch hitter, right-handed hitter off the bench, and also to give some of the regulars a rest, a day. And you know, I remember very vividly that the time that Davey put Kevin Mitchell at shortstop, and the media kind of questioned the fact whether Mitchell could play shortstop, and lo and behold, he made some tremendous plays. He made the routine plays and made some really good plays, but also gave us a force with his bat. So you think about guys on that team and looking back, the platoons that we had, and the guys that, you know, the Kevin Mitchells that were plug-in guys, who Kevin goes on to, you know, basically almost win a triple crown a few years later. I believe it was in San Diego, was it, Jay, that he almost won the triple crown? Or was it
San Francisco, wasn't it? Or am I mistaken?
San Francisco. Yeah. And Aguilera, Rick Aguilera was a swing guy. I mean, it was like when there was a guy to get skipped, Aggie was a guy to get skipped, and he became the long man in the bullpen. And, you know, the four starters with Doc and Ronnie and Sid and Bobby, you know, it was quite the team, because you had platoons at second, right? Wally and Tuff. You had platoon at third with Hojo and Ray. You basically had a platoon in center with Lenny and Mookie, and Mookie moving over to left a lot of times when Lenny played center. And you had a platoon as a closer with both Jesse and I. So it was a lot of guys that contributed in different ways.
And true, Davey was not always willing, never took it. He took a chance. He gambled. You know, I go to one specific game in Cincinnati in July of 86. We get to a big fight. Why to get to a fight? You guys got to a fight. When Eric Davis slid it to Ray Knight at third base, and
sure,
guys got ejected. And you remember you and Jesse entered the game in the outfield. I remember you caught a ball in left field or something. You would alternate back and forth. And, you know, Davey, he rolled the dice. He was a Las Vegas gambler. He didn't manage by the rules, don't you think? I mean,
yeah, Davey was, I don't want to say ahead of his time, but he was, he thought about the athleticism of his guys and what they're able to do. We just talked about Kevin Mitchell playing shortstop. You know, if you remember that game, Jay, I didn't catch the ball in left field.
Jesse
caught the ball. Tony Perez hit a line drive off me when I was pitching, and Jesse caught the ball in right field. I will tell you this. I believe it was Max Venable when Jesse was pitching and I was in left field, and he did loft a nice little fly ball to, I'd say, more left than left center. And I was camped under, and it would have been the third out, and it would have been great to be able to have a put out in the outfield. And so I'm camped under, and I'm looking up, and the ball's getting ready to come in my glove. And this foot steps on my foot, and the glove goes in front of my glove. And it was Lenny coming over from center field, cut right in front of me, stepped on my foot, caught the ball. And I said, "Lenny, what are you doing?" He goes, "Just wanted to be sure, man." So,
Roger, so but you know what? Anything?
But huh?
He didn't trust it.
Yeah, no, but he's seen me shag. That's where Davey got the idea, I think, because Jesse and I would shag in the outfield during batting practice, and that's how we got our conditioning in. And we would shag the whole batting practice and catch fly balls. And both of us had some athleticism and could kind of hold our own out there defensively, from the standpoint of catching the lazy fly balls. But, you know, if you remember, the other part is Gary Carter went to third base.
Right.
And there was a big, big bunt play where I know I was in left field because it was extra innings, and they had first and second, the Reds, and there was a bunt play on it. And Keith, from his position at first place, knew that they were going to bunt. And he came across the field and fielded a bunt on the third base side of the pitcher's mound and threw to Gary at third, and then the relay to first for a double play. And I don't want to say that epitomized our season, but that was, you know, one, an unbelievable anticipatory play by Keith and have the ability to make it, but also having Gary at third base and then throwing the first.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
And tough for Court to pull at second base, if I remember.
No, first.
At first. Right. Yeah. Talk about, you mentioned Keith. I mean, I spoke to Doc and to Ronnie, some of the other pitchers. When you were on the mound, was he like a Mel's assistant pitching coach, Sobermeyer? What did he mean to you as a pitcher having Keith at first base?
It was comfort, a comfortable feeling. It was a comfortable feeling because he made you feel very confident. He exuded kind of, and as you know, and people around the Mets that followed that team, he was a very confident person. And he was infectious with the rest of the club. It was weakened. It was never a doubt whether a play would be made, whether we would win or lose. We were always, it was always glass half full. And yes, he was the guy out there on the field. He was the general. He was Patton. He was Patton on the field and giving us opportunity to he made plays. Because of the athleticism of our pitching staff, he was able to play a defensive position that he may not have been able to play on a less athletic pitching staff, because he knew that he could play deeper. He could play more in the hole towards second base, because he knew that the pitcher would be at first base covering first base. And so he invariably cut off a lot of base hits to right field just because of where he positioned himself. And he knew the game so well. He knew the hitters so well around the league. He'd been around the league, and he just gave us as a staff a lot of confidence. And, you know, if we needed a kick in the butt, he gave it to us. If we needed a comforting shoulder, he gave it to us. Not many times did we need that comforting shoulder, because we knew that, you know what, we weren't going to get somebody's shoulder to cry on. He was going to say, hey, listen, we can do this.
Roger, another guy I want to give props to is Bobby Ojeda. I know he's a good friend of yours. You know, in the game one against the playoffs, we lose. Bobby pitches it, I think, 5-1 win in Houston. We lose the first two games of the World Series. He goes up to his own stomping grounds in Boston, pitches a great game and wins. You know, didn't have a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, but he found a way to win 18 games in the regular season, and we wouldn't have gotten where we were without him, don't you think?
Well, if you look up complete pitcher, he's probably one of the pictures you see next to that definition, because, you know, he, like you said, he didn't have an overpowering fastball. He was a good locator. He knew and had anticipation on what hitters were trying to do. He had, you know, an extreme confidence, and also he had the ability that he wasn't afraid to throw any pitch at any count at any time. You know, whether it's bases loaded and 3-2 and two out or nobody's on. And so, you know, Bobby was the key to, I think, the key to that pitching staff, because, you know, you'd already had Doc and Ronnie, and Sid was still young coming up. And Bobby solidified from, I would probably say, from the veteran leadership standpoint on the pitching staff. And he knew how to add and subtract. He knew the positions of his fielders, and he had the confidence of the greatest pitchers ever to play the game. I mean, he had all that confidence when he went out there. And you talk about that game, you know, in Houston, the first game. But he also, if you remember, he gave up 3 runs in that deciding 6th game. He gave up 3 runs in the first inning, and somehow shut him down until, you know, we eventually had an opportunity to come back against Nepper in the 9th.
Let me say this. I've been around a long time. Game 6, probably the most exciting game I've ever been involved with. We're losing. You know, I used to go down to the locker room and wait for the players to come in. I think I sat in the same place from the 8th inning to the 16th inning. We score 3 runs at the top of the 9th inning, get Snepper, tie the game up. You go on to pitch 5 innings, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That's 5, right? 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever
move? You got 5 fingers.
Yeah, I'm counting my fingers. I can't count up to 5, Roger. I mean, you give up 1 hit, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And we all feared. What fear did you have of Mike Scott and his scuff balls? I mean, I'm losing that game to go to game 7. I remember everybody was looking at the balls in the dugout.
Right.
He shut us down for two games. Do you ever pitch under more pressure than you did those 5 innings?
No, I don't think so, Jay. I mean, looking back at the time, I guess you feel the pressure. I mean, in the moment, you feel the pressure, but looking back, what evolved around that pressure and you start thinking about it. But at the time, it was like, listen, I gotta get three outs so that we have an opportunity to get some runs. And that was my mindset. And I don't know if you remember, Jay, but during the course of the year, I hadn't pitched very well against the Astros. And I think I was 0-3 with about a 14 ERA and lost, those three
That's not
games.
good, right? 14 ERA is not good.
No, it's not good. And
Okay, I didn't know. I just need
I remember going into that playoffs, and I remember the USA Today, and at the time that was a big baseball information source. And so I remember reading this little note, saying, Roger McDowell was 0-3 with a 14 against the Astros, and see what happens here. And as you know, when being with us, I had teams that I pitched against, and Jesse had teams that he pitched against. And the Astros really weren't my team. And it's kind of like you're kind of our latch this ditch effort when we run out of the other pitchers, because in all reality, they had predominantly left-hand hitting lineup. I mean, in the Astrodome, they played on AstroTurf, which was not my friend. And for whatever reason, they hit me very well. So going into that series, I always had that in the back of my mind. It's like, oh my God, I mean, I pitched against these guys all season and didn't do very well. And hopefully this will be a little bit better situation and an outcome. And fortunately for me, it was. There were some really two or three really good defensive plays. I think Elster made one at shortstop, and I think Keith made two at first base. And so I was fortunate, and the hit I gave up to Kevin Bass, I think, was in my last inning, and then Gary throws him out at second base. And so I was very fortunate. So I mean, it was, knowing that we had to face Mike Scott the next day, yeah, but at the time it was like, our whole belief, and you remember this, our whole belief was that if we could get into another team's bullpen, we would win the game. And so we were in their bullpen, and Dave Smith didn't have a whole lot of success against us as their closer. So
Right.
it was one of those games like,
Roger, you know the crazy thing about the game? When 16 innings, we used Ojeda, Aguilera, McDowell, Orozco, right?
that's four pitchers.
Four pitches for 16 innings. You think that would happen today?
There might be four pitches in 4 innings, but
That's crazy.
it's a different game. I mean,
Yeah.
it is. It's a totally different game. But I remember my turn was coming up to bat. I think it was in my after my third inning of work, or maybe it was after my second inning of work. And my turn is coming up to bat, and I'm thinking, this is the playoffs. There's no way I'm hitting, right? And so Mel comes down and says, Roger, get your stuff ready to hit. And I think it was all predicated on if the leadoff guy got on, I would not hit. And I think it was Lenny was hitting in front of me. And Davey maneuvered the lineup. I got my stuff up there and I got ready to hit. And I said, well, I guess I'm going out to pitch again. And so, yeah, we. Four innings, four pitchers in 16 innings. That's pretty incredible, especially in the playoffs when everything means everything.
Roger, don't get me mad when I bring this up. I have a reason for bringing this up. You were together with Buck for 1 year in 2018.
Two years.
Coach,
Two years. 2 years
2 years,
apart.
and major league pitch coach for 13 years. Your last year at Baltimore probably wasn't a great record, right? I mean, I think you.
No, we weren't good, and our pitching staff was the worst in the league.
Well, but I mean, I'm sure it wasn't, but I think you won 47 games that year.
Yeah,
But
I don't remember.
I don't want to laugh, Roger. I don't want to laugh. But
It's
what amazing
okay.
is, what did you get? I mean, working with Buck, it's tough to lose all those games. I mean, how was he with you? I mean, and then my second question is, are you surprised at all? I mean, the success he's had. I'm sure you're not surprised, what he's done with the Mets this year. Did you, was that a forerunner of you? Would you expect it, how we would do here?
So if you want me to talk about Buck, how long is this podcast?
Well, I think we run out about 20 minutes, Ron.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I mean, obviously I've had an opportunity to work with Bobby Cox, Freddie Gonzalez, Brian Snicker, and Buck Showalter. And Buck Showalter is someone that I am very fortunate that I got to work for. I'd always heard stories about Buck. You know, Carlos Tosca was one of our coaches in Atlanta, and he always tell me stories about Buck, you know, and how complete of a manager from the standpoint of managing the game, knowing the game, being professional, knowing his players, knowing the ability of his players, multitasking. I mean, I'm talking about multitasking. Buck, Buck's second to none. It's impressive. And the knowledge of what he does on a daily basis, preparing for a game, taking whatever it is that is given to him, whether it's video, whether it's data analytics, whether it's the training staff, whether it's one of the coaches so overhearing something, whatever it is, he takes all these things in and runs the best bullpen I've ever been around. I would say in the 2 years I was there, there were probably on one hand the number of times a pitcher got up in the bullpen and didn't get in the game, which from a bullpen standpoint, you love because, you know, when you get up in that bullpen and knowing what it is like to be a reliever, when you get up in the bullpen, you get ready, 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 and you don't get in the game and you don't get in the game that night, it is a game for you. But it takes its toll over the course of the season. You do that a bunch of times and at the end of the year, your pitchers are not, your relievers are not going to, you know, be able to wipe their butt. And so, especially in that last month, you want those guys fresh, you want them healthy, and you want them at their best. But I learned so much from Buck, from just from how to prepare for a game, and knowing I'd already been a pitching coach for 11 years.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And I got the opportunity to work with Buck for 2 years. And I'm telling you what, it's eye-opening. He has a great sense of humor. And that's one of the things that, you know, you hear about great managers. And usually they're very workmanlike and they look very workmanlike. His ability to speak with the press, his ability to have a relationship with the press, his ability to have a relationship with the city. And, you know, you saw it in Baltimore and you're starting to see it in New York, that the relationship with the fans, with the city. And obviously, you know what, when you win, yeah, it's better. So I was very fortunate and I apologize for taking so long, but it's not an easy answer because, you know, he's really good. He's really good.
You know what, Roger, you know, I've been working with the alumni the last couple of years and in the spring, he makes the time to know the guys, comes over. He shook Ed Kranepohl's hand, Art Chiemski's hand. He wants the players, the Mets, to know a sense of history. So he gets it. You know what I mean? He wants the players to know about the past, which is really great from my end, what we're trying to do from the alumni side.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. He gets it. He gets the fact that, you know, there were people before him that made this game. And he respects that, and he gets it. And he wants to show, you know, a lot of people want to show their appreciation for him. He wants to show his appreciation for those guys that came before him and, you know, that were
yeah, it's great. It's really
respectful of the game. You know, it's And the accountability, and the other part about Buck, and I things keep popping in my mind, but the accountability, you know, his accountability, his coach's accountability, the players' accountability, not only to themselves, but the city and to the organization. It's off the charts.
Yeah, I agree. What he's doing this year is tremendous. We're gonna keep it going. One of my favorite guys with the Mets, Bill Robertson, late Bill Robertson, unfortunately passed away a little bit ago. Bill's widow, Mary's coming to the old timers at game.
Good.
And on more than one occasion, Roger, you almost killed Bill at first base. Not intentionally, but the master of the hot foot, you and Hojo, and in more than one occasion, Uncle Bill, as you used to call him,
right,
was the recipient of the hot foot. Why don't you tell the people how you put together a good hot foot?
Well, the pieces of the hot foot aren't readily available anymore. Obviously the cigarettes are, but the book of matches that you wrap around the cigarette, the gaff tape is still available. And we use, Howard and I, experimented with a lot of different things. First, we started with bubble gum. Then we figured out, you got to chew the bubble gum a long time to get the sugar out so it stays sticky. And then it was a little too long of a process. And so we started experimenting with tape to tape the matchbooks, where you had to take apart to get the two strips of matches. You had to take the little staple out to get the two strips of matches. And so we experimented with, how tight to wrap it around the cigarette, because if you wrapped it too tight, it's kind of like we were scientists to some degree.
You were scientists. Yes, you were.
Yeah. And so it was like, you couldn't wrap it too tight or the air wouldn't allow the cigarette to burn down to ultimately light the matches. So Bill became a favorite target because usually he was closest to the dugout and you had a better chance of the hot foot, the cigarette not extinguishing itself because of his proximity to the dugout. And so plus, in all reality, what's the first base coach? I know what he does, but to the fan, it's like, okay, what do you say? You grab the gloves, you grab the gear, and you go, all right, take your lead,
straight
on the line drive, look at the third base coach, da da da. And so, from a responsibility standpoint, Bill had responsibilities, but not to the extent of Buddy over third base or Sam Palazzo. And so Bill became like an easy target. Wait a minute. He loved it. He absolutely loved it. It kind of became, I think there were times that he knew it was on, but because of, maybe we lost a game or two and he wanted to get some levity. And so he was an easy target.
Especially like the dugouts in Cincinnati were long dugouts and almost got to first base. I remember one time I remember just hopping around and almost falling down there. Roger, another one of your expertise was firecrackers in the dugout more than once.
You talked about the four pitchers in 16 innings in that playoff game.
Yes.
What would happen now if the firecrackers went off after the national anthem in the dugout?
They would evacuate the stadiums, I think.
But that was – I don't know what it was. I think we'd gone through a spell of where we weren't hitting very well. We were in a little bit of an offensive slump. And I don't know where I got the firecrackers. They were black cats, and there was a whole strip of them. And so I got the idea of just, lighting our bats up and, getting a little explosion on the bats. And so after one of the national anthems, I think the first time was at home, because, at home you could do things that sometimes you couldn't do when you're on the road. And so, after one of the national anthem, I lit these things up and they went off, and I think we broke out for some runs that day. So it was a good thing.
Have you seen the Let's Go Mets Go video in a while? That was one of my favorite videos.
No, with the pop. No, I haven't, Jay. I haven't seen that in a while.
No, I remember kids bobblehead going back and forth. But, right, I tell you, Roger, I'm really looking forward to August 27th. 65 guys, different eras. You have a lot of the 86 guys will be there. It'll be fun reminiscing. And you're a big part of our history. You've been a good friend all these years. And you always been there for me when I needed you. And once again, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. And look forward to seeing you in a couple of months.
Anytime and always, and look forward to the old timers game and looking forward to seeing you again.
Yeah. I haven't got any better looking, Roger.
I can see that.
I'll see you in a couple of months, Roger. Be well.
All right. Adios.
All right, guys.